Welcome back to a Mime Soapbox. Today we're talking bad movies, and if I would have anyone on the show with me to talk about bad movies, it's going to be my buddy Anthony. Hi Anthony, how you doing?
Dude, I gotta be honest with you, I don't even know why the fuck I'm here, but I'm glad to be here to talk about bad movies with you in person, literally right next to you. This isn't like I'm at my place and you're at your place. I am here. And we watched a bad movie.
We watched a real bad movie. So we watched Bulletproof, which is the 1988 Gary Busey action flick that fell flat on every potential surface possible.
Well, I mean, technically 1987 in the UK, and then it was released.
No one cares about the UK.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, listen, you know what? No one in the UK is going to listen. I mean, people in the UK listen to my podcast, but probably no one in the UK listens to your podcast.
There's a couple, actually.
I got friends in the UK. Well, there's a couple. They're probably my friends that listen to you because I talked about you. So
it could be.
So we're literally shitting on my friends and any and all connections that I have in the UK. So thank you.
But realistically, the goal tonight was we were going to get together, have a cigar, and watch a bad movie, right?
And we did both those things.
Let's first talk about the cigar for a moment, because it was actually pretty exceptional.
Yeah, so I got it in the duty-free in Montego Bay. White Hennessy-infused Jamaican cigars. You can really only get them in Montego Bay. $10 a stick, totally worth it. Good stuff. Next time I am in Montego Bay, Jamaica, I'm definitely going to make another trip to the duty-free and just rack up on those things. The problem is you can't keep those in your humidor because of the smell. So you have to actually like put them in like a travel humidor or something else, because it's just going to like, your humidor will just smell like that forever.
Yeah.
And all the other cigars as well.
Invasive.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah. So
really invasive, but it's funny because we watched this movie Bulletproof that for the first, I would say quarter of the movie is nothing but cigar jokes. And not even jokes, but just like, I don't know how many times it was like, do you want a cigar? Have a cigar. Sit down and have a cigar for this one. Like, it was this continual notion of like, oh, you'll need a cigar to hear this.
And they got it from Cuba.
Yeah, there was Cubans in the pseudo, like, secret Pentagon area.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start with this movie, dude. It was just all over the place. There were so many different, like, countries involved for really, like, no particular reason. There was no, like, really plot of the movie. Like, I still have no idea what they were trying to do.
Well, that was something I really noticed, because like when they're trying to show like some weird desolate part of Mexico, because most of this film takes place in like guerrilla Mexico, if that was really a thing. But the scenes they're shooting for the first half of the film, which is not good, but it seemed like they were repurposing a Alamo, like a Defend the Alamo set that was already built for this movie to be some part of desolate Mexico. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Well, it was like really chintzy, fake drywall, paper mache, like church-esque buildings that kind of look like the Alamo when they were just like getting the story established to start off with.
And still, like, with that being said, I have no idea like what was actually going on. I mean, I get it. Defend Alamo. There was like a preacher involved in the basement. There were soldiers involved. Like the U.S. Army was involved in like different armies, I guess, maybe like Mexican drug cartel, Iraq, maybe Iran, some kind of Middle Eastern something, Brazil, maybe. Dude, I have no idea.
Well, let's start from the beginning. Okay. With this movie, because there's kind of a lot to go over. When it starts, there's some silly, pointless 80s action plot drama that starts off with, right?
Yep. Got Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo's in there, like, you know, 80 pounds lighter than we know him today. The one we were talking about, 87, 88.
Short hair.
Like, it's and he has like a pseudo cameo. It's only a couple speaking lines, but he's definitely in the film. And at this time, including the next couple scenes prior, We have learned that our main star, Gary Busey, has been shot at least 38 times.
38 times, and apparently there's no health insurance because he takes out all these bullets on his own.
He goes home and does like a pseudo Terminator scene where he's pulling bullets out of his arms into a bloody sink.
And there's some weird chick in the bathtub naked.
Yeah, she's naked with the nipples, rubber ducky.
And you know, suds from the soap. But well, the nipples well, are clearly
and
like
he's a room
out.
Over, you know, self extracting like I guess they were 9mm wounds. Like it was nothing. And then he pulls out this like mason jar that's already like a eighth full of depleted rounds that he's pulled from his body. And I made the joke when we were watching this movie, which will come up later, but I was like, man, he's been shot 40 times. And lo and behold, we find out that's like two rounds off.
Yeah. You're
as far as the true lore and mythos of this movie.
You were pretty damn close, dude. If you were, you know, guessing the amount of jelly beans in the jar, you probably would have won, dude.
I had it.
You would have won the prize.
Right? So, and then we start off with all this action nonsense, and then obviously there's the trope of the sidekick being murdered in the beginning to give, like, the main character more edge and anger, and it ends up being for that murder of the henchman right-hand man scene, we had an actor we weren't expecting to be in this movie to be a part of that murder.
Yeah, that was Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat, who was also, you know, the granddad in Johnny Tsunami. Kerry Tagawa, I believe, is how you pronounce his name. Completely unexpected. It was only in one scene, but I'm like, that's Shang Tsung. And it was kind of hard to tell because it was dark and you didn't really get like a clear shot of his face.
Too.
But, you know, Shang Tsung has a very distinct look. You know what I mean? So I definitely got Mortal Kombat vibes for like 30 seconds. So there was that.
Which is probably the best 30 seconds we had.
Yeah, best 30 seconds of the movie for sure. I was just waiting for him to say, your soul is mine.
Yes, exactly. And then the next thing we notice before we start getting into like deeper like thought about the movie, wearing a Letterman in your 40s is kind of cringy.
Yeah. So I think... I mean, wearing a Letterman even in your late 20s, I would probably say, is cringy.
Yes.
But 40s, he had a Letterman jacket on.
We assume he's between, what they're shooting for is 38 to 43, maybe.
Yeah, but it's Gary Busey, so he looks 50.
But he looks 50, and he's wearing a Letterman jacket to like some important meeting or something silly. And it's so standout awkward that... He's wearing his Letterman as this like old man during this action flick.
Yeah.
It's odd.
And I don't even know what he lettered in.
It doesn't feel right. We don't know what he lettered in.
I don't even know if that was his jacket.
I can't wear a single thing from when I was 18. I don't know how he's still fitting into that jacket.
Well, you know, I can, but you know, this isn't about me or you. This is about this is about Gary Busey, you know.
The Letterman was really weird. And then next, they had a catchphrase that it seemed like they tried to stick for the first like quarter of the movie and then disappeared. But Gary Busey calls like three different people butthorns. Butthorn.
You know, there was someone in the writer's room who just absolutely insisted on using that line. And it was probably someone so important that they couldn't say no to. So they just had to like go with it. But it was so cringe and so bad. Butthorn.
They really tried to like pigeonhole. And
now, granted, this isn't a PG movie. This is, I mean, we've seen tits. I mean, there's gore, so they could have definitely have used
gore, violence, sexual conduct, the sexual saxophone scene, which is a whole other story. The implied rape. Like, this is obviously not a movie for children by any regards. But you know, there's cussing and violence and gore, but yet he's calling his enemies butthorns.
And he butthorn.
But it only breaks for like the first third of the movie. After that, the whole butthorn catchphrase disappears.
And then he's playing saxophone on the beach, seemingly for no reason.
Yeah, it didn't fit at all. It was just like, oh, we need a shot of Gary Busey, who they try to portray as some like sexual icon, which I've never known Gary Busey to be considered a sexual icon ever? Was this like the one try that failed and they realized it wasn't a thing?
Maybe Gary Busey like convinced them that he was a sexual icon and that this was a good idea. So maybe in Gary Busey's head, this is like how he sees himself. But in all actuality, anyone else that watches this movie is kind of like face palming the entire time.
It's rough.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it's funny because, like, I watched this with a little more bass than some because I've met Gary Busey. And it was at Days of the Dead.
You have a story to tell.
I have a story. Quick story before we continue here. It was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. Gary Busey was at Days of the Dead.
How did he look?
Awful.
Terrible. Like I would expect. Like 30 years past that movie, exactly how I would think he would look.
Okay. That plus like a sprinkle of Looney Bin and cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
continued rough. Every day for the next 30 years.
Yeah, it never stopped. Okay. Yeah. So we're there, and I'm there with quite a handful of acquaintances I met up. To reacquaint with and enjoy the experience with. And we'll just keep the story short. Gary Busey grabbed one of my close friend's girlfriend's butts, laughed about it, ran off like a child, and then pulled the fire alarm to the whole hotel the convention was being held at after groping my buddy's girlfriend's butt.
And then he wasn't like seen or heard from.
Yeah, him. And then he just ran.
Laughing while he's running.
Yeah, pretty much. And everyone just like, oh, Gary, you're so silly. And it was like shrugged off.
That's fucking crazy.
It was really weird.
Like you're playing with fire doing shit like that in the South.
Really? It was really weird.
Yeah.
But he was like as weird and twacked out as you could have imagined from day one throughout the whole event. Aside from the, you know, the craziness and chaos that ensued.
He probably didn't even know where the fuck he was.
It was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough. But it was exciting, I guess.
You got a Gary Busey story out of it. How does your buddy feel about it? Like, did y'all have a conversation after that? Did
he say anything? I think it was, like, still suspended in disbelief that even happened, where it was comical instead of...
So he didn't get angry.
Nah, he wasn't really mad.
You would have got angry.
Oh, right? I would have been. Yeah.
Instantly, right?
Yeah.
No laughter.
Yeah.
You would have been ready to fight Gary Busey.
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't have made it to the fire alarm.
Yeah, because he's probably not that fast.
Probably not.
Because he looked slow even in this movie.
He did. It's so awkward. It's so awkwardly like old, like almost boomer
even
guy.
When he was like throwing a punch, I'm like, this dude doesn't know how to punch.
Nah.
He didn't know how to do anything like action. Like he's not an action star. And that's very clear.
So we touched down on the saxophone sex implied scenes because they were really like kind of stand out from the rest of the film. They didn't make a whole lot of sense. They literally like made sure they got shots of him laying in bed with the saxophone while he was like half passed out, saxophone across his chest as he's strung across the bed. And then it morphs into some weird beach scene where he's playing saxophone to a girl he had intimate relations with 20 years prior or whatever the time frame was that still made no sense. It was a weird flashback that was just really, really, really forced for it to get back to current time as the story continued.
And the timeline in and of itself was kind of all over the place. Like I was confused with the time jumps. They didn't really do a good job of like transitioning to like, this is the future now. It was just, you're here.
And then shortly after that, we start getting into the like Mexican action scenes. And Gary Busey uses the word cactus as a cuss word. You remember that?
To be honest with you, no. I don't remember.
It was something ridiculous. I can't remember to the full extent, but it was like, what in the cactus, or like something similar to that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like this stupid Mexican desolate action scene. It breaks out.
And they kept calling Gary Busey a Yankee.
Yeah, they called him Yankee the whole time.
Even though like there's nothing about Gary Busey that screams Yankee.
Not at all. It was like Mexicans just assume anyone from America is a Yankee.
But even I think other people outside of the Mexicans, even the other countries were calling him, like everybody was just referring to him as the Yankee. And it really made no sense. God, this fucking movie was bad, dude.
Because he went by like his name by some, others Bulletproof, and then the rest Yankee.
Yeah.
It was like a weird juggle between the three as each like mythos or legendum was trying to grow at the same time. And they can't.
And then there was this weird scene of him like almost like Jesus on the cross on like this wheel.
Yeah, the wheel. Yeah, that was odd.
Where I guess his love interest in the movie was like, I'm going to drop this grenade. And
well, before that, even he got caught, or he was dealing with like a little small caravan of patrol Mexican terrorists, or I don't know what you want to call them. I don't know what they were. Guerrillas or...
Yeah, cartel.
Yeah, cartels. And he yet again calls someone a butthorn. As he says, bird season is over, butthorn. As he strolls up onto like two or three Mexican dudes that are sitting in a like a little, small little Humvee with some mounted machine gun in the back shooting at birds that were flying off, like quails or whatever
just,
they were.
Just wasting bullets.
And he just like creeps out of the bushes, jumps out, says, bird season is over, butthorn, and then kills them all.
Well, at first he tells him he's the game warden.
Yeah, he does. I'm the game warden, and bird season's over. Oh my God. Butthorn.
Dude.
Butthorn. I think this, like, you'd be hard pressed to find another movie that used the term butthorn on anybody.
It doesn't make sense.
It's not good.
I'm not even being, like, at all sarcastic when I really do believe I could write a better script than this before I go to bed tonight.
But then next, yes, right, like, immediately after he gets caught and is put onto the giant, like, fiber or copper electrical spool, like the wooden trash spools that they use for heavy wiring, and he's just strapped up in the middle of their guerrilla Mexican military town,
just hanging there
and
just hanging out.
The scene prior, of course, the heroiness gets a hold of a random grenade to free Gary Busey shortly after.
But the way it was done, she was just like, I'm going to drop the grenade, and either it's going to blow you to pieces or you're going to be set free.
Yep.
Like, those were the only two options. And so she drops the grenade. He starts rolling down a hill, and then they kind of just, like, fast forward to him at the bottom of the hill, and now he's off of it. Or, like, he's getting off of
it. And the roll down was, like, obviously, like, a scarecrow or something attached to the wheel.
You could see straw hanging out
of it. It wasn't even a stuntman, let alone Gary Busey, right? It was pretty rough. It was kind of ragdoll.
I just, like, at what point did, like, you know, did he get untied, you know?
he just rode down the hill, and then it's implied while rolling down the hill, he gets freed from the spool to continue the story.
Injury free, by the way. He's walking just fine.
And then he gets shot again, and he extracts it inside of the tank.
He has to extract it.
So they have this, like, weird tank thing that's, like, the core of the story. That the same tank's been used in other movies, as my wife Brooke has explained. Apparently, it was used in like a Rambo movie and something else. Red Dawn. They had the same like prop tank that was supposed to be like this big futuristic tank thing that looks like just a standard tank with drywall and some paint thrown on it. And he gets in the tank and extracts what was known to be the 39th bullet he's taken, as he requested his love interest in the movie to save it for him, or give it to him to save, to add to the jar that was shown early in the film. So when I said, oh, he's been shot 40 times earlier in the movie, we were off by like one or two, because we're at 39 here at this point. And I think he does end up taking another one at some point. But then after that, so like they have possession of the tank, and the movie just turns to mush for like 25 minutes. Nothing relevant or important happens other than really bad tank shots and guerrilla Mexican scenes. And it just rides on that for as long as it can, for as much filler as possible.
Well, there's also this apparently like detonator, which is made of plastic, which I don't know like what it's supposed to be like connected to or what it's supposed to blow up. But this detonator has been like threatened several times throughout the movie. Like, I'm going to press the button. I'm going to blow it all up. And it's so clearly like made of plastic that you can literally hear the plastic of the detonator. Oh, it's bad. Yeah. It's so bad.
It gets brought up a few times because like I think initially he has it, right?
Yeah.
Or something similar. And he acts like he's about to trigger it and gets away with it because of it. And then one of the bad guys tries to do the same. And then he gets run over by a tank.
Well, he gets pistol whipped first.
Yeah, and then ran over by a tank. And then his arm is extended just long enough where his arm with the detonator in hand didn't get ran over with the rest of them. Very convenient.
Man, yeah. And you like you can clearly see him not getting ran over. Like there's so much space between him and the tank.
Yeah, on the tracks.
I almost thought he was just gonna be under there alive and like he was gonna get him. Like
it's bad. And then not only that, but there was that one really hokey scene because we had a bunch of POWs. Like so, the love interest, her like right hand in command, and it was a preacher and two nuns, and then the rest of their goons were all. Like POWs of this Mexican cartel guerrilla group, and he ends up sawing through iron chains with a non-serrated blade, and then also sawed through everyone else's chains with a non-serrated army blade and freed them all, which is probably the most unbelievable and cringy scene of the whole movie.
You had to suspend disbelief so many times throughout this movie, but that was one of the like...
I mean, the guy's holding like a military surplus, like mock knife and sawing through what you would think would be like dungeon chains in a matter of a minute.
Yeah, it's like the chains in Game of Thrones that the dragons were like chained to, and this dude is just sawing through.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's real bad.
So, I don't know. One star. 1 out of 5 stars. Final rating.
it's rough.
And I'm only giving it 1 star because I finished it.
And then what? In the end of the scene, there was that the really awkward, like, stabbing thing that none of it made sense. Where it was like the main, or like the right-hand man of the main bad guy.
Yeah, the main goon, essentially.
And then his, like, Mexican cartel guy that had the Uzi with the weird sight that he never used and was just like gung-ho crazy. And then
he never looked down the sight once.
Yeah, the POW dude just stabs one of them and it was like just really cheesy.
And he's dead.
And he was dead and it was just like, oh, well, that's that.
I thought there was going to be some kind of like final showdown.
We built this bad guy up since like scene 3 of the movie.
I was expecting some kind of final showdown. Where he finally, like, puts the gun down and is like, let's do this. I don't need this gun. And then they just, like, fight it out. But no, he was dead. It was so bad.
And then it was, like, what was it? It was, I think, like, 4/5, maybe 3/5 of the way through the movie. They show that the Mexican cartel was really being run by, like, Russian communists.
Did that even happen?
Yeah.
I don't even
know. It happened. There were, like... All of a sudden,
I'm glad you caught
that. Who you thought was the main bad guy, there was another main bad guy on top of him who looked startlingly familiar to the father from Malcolm in the Middle.
Bryan Cranston?
Yes. He looked just like him, just like an older, more raspy, aged version of him at the time, because we're talking about 88, 87. That was like this Russian military boss that was in control of all these Mexican cartel guerrillas out of nowhere just to like throw in Russia because they had the guy with the fuzzy hat with the hammer and sickle on it like as the big bad guy, you know, because big bad Russia. It was really random. Didn't fit in with anything. Not that there was anything for it to fit in with in the first place, but
yeah, man, this was a big like pot of gumbo that wasn't good at all. 1 star.
It's bad. And it's perfect since I wanted to start a bad movie series with you.
I know, man.
Because we get to sit down and have a good cigar and watch a bad movie together and pick it apart.
I just hope next time it's not that bad.
No, I want it worse.
You want it?
I want it worse in a way where it's comical instead of worse where it's just depressing.
Like that I'm struggling to get through it. Like, it was that bad. But I got through it. The cigar was good.
Cigar was great.
I made enough, like, you know, because I'm not going to be able to watch a movie like this and sit quiet and not make jokes and talk shit about the movie as it's happening. That would almost, like, ruin the experience for me. So I think that's also part of the fun, just, like, pointing out, like, just the sheer silliness and the inaccuracies in the movie. So, yeah.
It was fun, too, to have, like, have a good cigar when this movie for the first quarter is nothing but cigar references anyway.
That's true. That was a nice little touch. I'll give it that.
It made it a little more comfortable and close to home, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, have a cigar.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I got these from Cuba.
Or I hate it when I watch a good like or even like a good movie or a TV show when they have cigars in the TV show that just look delicious and then I'm just like completely out of cigars and it's just like, oh my God. This is depressing.
So the movie on the scale of I hate to love it or love to hate it because like that's the scale for bad movies. This movie's bad. There isn't a single redeeming quality. It doesn't have any humor. It's not a satire of itself. It's just actually bad. And it could be assumed to be that since it's a Gary Busey main lead acting role, action role. But it's awful. It's just bad. Across the board. Yeah, we're going to throw in a rape scene just so we can add some gravity to the movie. All the action was as fake as possible. The tank didn't make sense at all.
And this wasn't meant to be a comedy.
No.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. This was not meant to be a comedy. But yet I almost thought it was.
It should have been. It would have been better if they would have actually like sprinkled some legitimate humor on top to mask how bad the rest of the film was.
I guess 1 star because Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, we had Shang Tsung. But like, I mean, there's obviously like good bad movies that are fun. And them being bad makes them fun, like The Room or, you know, Big Trouble in Little China and all these things. Where they're technically not good movies, but they're still incredibly entertaining. This wasn't even entertaining.
It really wasn't, man.
The only entertaining parts we had were the conversations amongst ourselves and the jokes we broke about it.
Yes. I had to make sure that because I have like no cell phone service out here, so I had to absolutely make sure I was connected to Wi-Fi before we started this movie.
It's bad. And I mean just assume the worst of Gary Busey and that's what this movie is. As they tried to establish him as a sexual icon, a saxophone master and a military mastermind, which none of those things relate to Gary Busey.
No, because he just comes off as like a fucking idiot.
It's almost like if you had a clumsy, awkward, even more retarded Bill Clinton play the main role in this movie.
Just so we're clear, Drew said the R word, not Anthony.
Gary Busey's more retarded than Bill Clinton. Or Bill Clinton's more retarded than Gary Busey, one or the other. But that, I mean, that's what it really came down to. Is like it was almost a satire of Bill Clinton, I feel like. You can see the similarities between Busey's acting character and Bill Clinton. And then when you throw the like ludicrous saxophone sex scenes on top of it, which we know Bill Clinton was proud of.
But this was before Bill Clinton was even president.
It was right before, yes.
I think
it was almost like prophetic.
George H.W. Bush was president at this time.
Yes. I believe so. Wait. No, it was Reagan.
Was it?
Yep.
Because he was 88 to 92, right?
This is about the like the beginning of the cusp of the Reagan era.
Gotcha.
But it was almost like prophetic with Bill Clinton. Do you not see that? Am I just being weird?
I mean, I didn't really think about it, but it kind of makes sense. Even though it was like before Bill Clinton.
It was, but it was like I said, it was like a prophetic.
I don't think anyone like thought of Bill Clinton when they made this movie.
No. But it's just like I said, it's like awkwardly, uncomfortably prophetic.
I got nothing else, dude.
I'm
kind of almost just completely out of thoughts on this movie.
The movie's bad. The effects are bad. The acting's bad. The dialogue's bad. The soundtrack's bad. There's not a single redeeming quality of this whole film at all. It's not even it's so bad, it's good, because those are my favorites. This is just bad. And I think it's a good way to kick off the bad movie podcast, though.
I think so, man. Look forward to doing another one of these with you.
The next one or two, we're going to make sure they're good because they're bad.
Yeah. I want to have some better takes for the next one. I just don't have anything to really say. I don't have anything insightful to say about this movie. It's just all negative.
It's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough. I didn't know it existed. This was actually suggested by my wife, so we can all thank her for this one.
We can either thank her or blame her.
Yeah. Well, she was cracked up about the whole butt horn. We actually call three or four people butt horn throughout the film, as it was a very aggressive derogatory term.
And the saxophone.
And then, yeah, the weird saxophone. It was like almost like Top Gun, where they like shoehorned in the volleyball scene. It was almost like that. But Gary Busey and a saxophone, of all things. Not Tom Cruise on the beach. Gary Busey and a saxophone in bed.
Let that sink in, guys.
Think about it. Think about it.
And if you don't know who Gary Busey is, just Google Gary Busey 2020. Click on images and then imagine that.
Yeah, that's all you need. It's truly all you need. That's it. That's it.
That's all I got, dude. I need you guys to all go follow me on Instagram at Weird Anomaly. Well, Jesus Christ, can I talk? At Weird Anomaly. Or you can follow my podcast page, Weird Crew Podcast, on Instagram at Weird Crew Podcast. And please come talk to me. I look forward to hearing from you.
Yep, you're going to hear a lot from us soon. You know my Instagram and my soapbox. Let us know what you thought about the movie, what you thought about our take on the movie, and we will talk to you soon about another movie. Thanks for spending your evening.
I'm out, bitch.
Later.